This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening in San Diego? Welcome into Gwen and Chris, kicking off another week here on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby, together in our Odyssey Palace studios, where you can watch the program. Just go to YouTube, search 97.3 The Fan. You can tune in. Check us out. Tony Gwynn Jr. is at Petco Park, where tonight the Padres will begin a three-game series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Padres finished things up in good shape yesterday. Partied like it was 2011. That's the last time the Padres scored 12 runs in the first three innings of a game.
Wow, that's a good stat.
And they did that yesterday, 13 years ago. I don't recall that explosion, but they certainly exploded yesterday. Ha-Sung Kim, Luis Camposano, three-run homers, and the Padres were on easy street as they beat the Giants 13-4 to gain a split of the four-game series. Tony Gwynn Jr. called the action. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic on this Monday afternoon. Padres finished up that Giants series nicely, winning, as you mentioned, the 12 runs in the first three innings was definitely brought a lot of joy to the stadium. And they really, after two lackluster offensive nights the two previous days, they bounced back in a big way.
Yeah, I think if you get 12 in the first three innings, you're going to win a lot of games. So that's a pretty good method if you want to have a successful season. Come out swinging like that. The other good method to winning a lot of games is to keep getting a bunch of hits with runners in scoring position. And, I mean, it seems like we're repeating this on a daily basis, and I guess it's a good thing, Tony. I mean, the Padres are hitting .388 right now with runners in scoring position. I think even more impressive than that is the fact that they've had 67 at-bats in six games with runners in scoring position. That's an average of over 11 opportunities per night. And as long as you're getting that kind of traffic and that many chances, you're going to have to be able to score. You're going to score runs. It's just going to happen. And, you know, I'm not going to overreact to the slow start of Joe Musgrove or a bad inning by Cosgrove the other day. I think the pitching's going to be fine. The Padres keep scoring like this and getting chances like this. Good things are going to keep happening.
I certainly would like to think so. I'm reluctant because the Padres created opportunities last year, but were just abysmal cashing them in.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for that reason, I'm reluctant. But we've been talking about it really since spring training, right? I mean, this is clearly been something, and it's not just the runners in scoring position. It's situational hitting. It's good at bats. It's clearly something that has been a focus of this ball club going back to spring training, because it's probably the one element of last year's season. If you change, you have a completely different end result to your season. And so to see that they focused on it so heavily, and that in at least the first, you know, six games for the Padres, there's been this kind of result is really, really encouraging. Now, obviously, six games, that leaves us with 156 to go. You're going to have to make sure you keep this up for the majority of the season. But it is encouraging to see it be talked about, worked, almost an identity established about it, around it, during the course of spring training. And that through six games, you're seeing the fruits of it kind of to pop out right now. It's really encouraging. And that's despite, as you said, it not necessarily look the way we maybe anticipated from a pitching standpoint. I mean, so far, Yu Darvish has had the best performance of the three that we've seen so far, right? or the four that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
And the bullpen has kind of had mixed results as they try to figure out who's going to fit best where and how Mike Shields going to use those guys in different roles. But offensively, I think there's a ton to really be encouraged about.
Yeah. I mean, the team ERA right now is 6.33. So that's not where you expected it to be through six games. But the team batting average is .297, which is also not where you expected it to be.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's not just one guy. I mean, you've got six different players have already hit home runs. Jake Cronenworth is not one of those guys, but he's hit .375. Xander hasn't homered yet, and he's at .333. Jackson Merrill, I think, is more than holding his own. Got his first RBI yesterday. Continues to hit the ball with authority.
You just have to look at, I mean, give the bottom of the lineup a lot of credit.
They've done a good job, right?
Even when they haven't hit, they have found their way on bases. And with Wade and Jackson, who both can run at the bottom, and Wade has shown the ability to steal a base, I think it's been good to see. It's been good to see. And, you know, all of this is contingent on it continuing, but at least through six, offensively, you got to feel a lot better than you did last year after first six, I think.
You know, one of the guys that I think that we just assumed was going to be good this year, but I don't know that you could have counted on it. I mean, because he really hasn't had a long career before now. Camposano,
yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that I think we just, you know, we had so many questions this spring about Jackson Merrill and what he can do, and, you know, Tyler Wade and Graham Pauley going to play third base, and are they going to be able to hold the fort, and Jerkson Profar in left field, and who's going to be DH when man. But we just kind of assumed that Luis Camposano was going to hit .300 and be a slugger in the middle of the lineup. And you know what? He has been. But .391, I mean, if he doesn't get two hits in a game, it seems like it's a surprise.
Yeah.
This, you know, he's got 14 total bases already in just five starts. I don't want to say it's a surprise, but this is a very welcome thing to add to this, you know, lineup. And, you know, he's obviously getting great marks, you know, behind the plate as well.
Yeah.
This guy's, he seems like a burgeoning star, Tony, and I know it's so early, but this is what we would hope for our young players to be with the Padres.
Yeah, you're not the only one. I mean, Jesse made the bold prediction before the season started that he would be an all-star. But it was, so you're not the only one who's bullish on this, and I think sometimes, especially with young guys, we want it to come up, we want it to happen like right now.
Yeah.
But if you think about kind of how it's gone for Luis, he got a little bit of it in 22. He got a little bit more in 23. And now they're kind of turning the reins over to him. And that seasoning and that kind of slow kind of piecemeal kind of way they went about it, I think is the right way. He's a catcher. And I think all of it's kind of coming together. Again, all of this has to continue through the course of the season. I understand that. But he's been really good, not just offensively, but I think what's made it impressive is it's been on both ends. Defensively, blocking balls, he's been fantastic. And it's, you can see the improvements in his game on the offensive side and on the defensive side. And it's just really a testament to him and the work he's been putting in order to get to this point.
Yeah, 3-3 is the start. It's not anything, but there's a lot of good things that have happened. And again, I'm not going to really worry about Joe Musgrove. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's people that are. He didn't have a great spring. His first two starts have not been Joe-like, but this guy works too hard and has too much skill for it to, you know, keep going. And so he's going to be fine. Darvish is looking better already this year. And, you know, Dylan Cease, no problems with his outing. And same for Michael King. I mean, the game got away from Cease, not Cease, but it got away from Cosgrove. And that's just to me, that's a one-off.
Yep.
And so, you know, I feel pretty good about this. You got the Cardinals coming in. Kyle Gibson's a 15-game winner from a year ago. That was in Baltimore. He had a 1.32 whip, so he was hittable. He just was he got a lot of support with the Orioles. So, you know, I think you get this series, and you're pretty happy with how the season has started.
I have a YouTube chat from Chris, and Chris says, I think we all thought Luis would hit, but nobody is talking about how much his defense has improved. Very impressed. There's a lot of big Campy fans out there.
Yeah, Tony mentioned it. Yeah, Tony mentioned it. I mean, you know, I mean, he's been blocking balls like, you know, just fantastic job doing that. So
this is just to remind you, 2 years ago, might even have been 3 years ago, Blake Snell, starting Pittsburgh, didn't get out of the first inning. And he was furious. I mean, we never confirmed this, but if you watched the game, you knew exactly what was going on. He came in and, gosh, what was the gentleman's, the pitching coach's name at the time? Rothschild.
Oh, right? Larry Rothschild, yeah.
Larry Rothschild. He came in and was, I mean, he was pissed. He was letting and Larry just sat there and listened, and I think it had to do with the fact that Cappy was behind the plate, and it just wasn't going well. That is where, now fast forward to now, where he's at blocking, doing, you know, a lot of the things that he struggled with, and we don't have any of these problems. But it just goes to show you that sometimes it takes time for guys to develop. To be able to handle not only getting in that box and facing a big league pitcher, but being able to handle and call games and have your starter out there feeling good about what the fingers you're putting down or the voice in his ears that you're putting in there. Whatever the case may be, Campy's come a long way. And he's doing well.
Yeah, hard work is an amazing thing. And Luis Camposano off to a really nice start. All right, Padres Cardinals coming up. Tony and Jesse will have the call. That is a little bit later in the evening. Sammy Levitt will have the pregame show following our show at 5:40 tonight. But before we get to all of that, we will be talking plenty of baseball. Of course, the opening week of the season is in the bag. Juan Soto has already etched his name on the American League MVP trophy, much to my dismay. Leading the Yankees out of the gate at 4-0.
Chris may be a bigger hater than me for the first time in this show's history.
We'll find out a little later as we go along. I tell you, it was painful to watch him just have every day the highlight, eighth inning, Juan Soto, home run. Juan Soto throws out the runner at the plate. Juan Soto, game-winning single. He won every game practically for the Yankees this weekend. So that's more games than he won for the Padres, I think, in a year and a half. But anyway, that's I digress. We'll talk plenty of opening weekend Major League Baseball. We will get into the NCAA basketball tournament. The UConn Huskies look unbeatable, but then again, Purdue is, you know, a force with Zach Edey. North Carolina State is wearing those Cinderella slippers. Alabama got in there for the first time ever. I'll tell you one thing, I appreciated watching the Elite Eight games this weekend and seeing, you know, Alabama, first time ever in the Final Four. Purdue, first time since 1980. North Carolina State, first time since 1983. So those two schools hadn't been there in 40 years. Alabama had never been there.
When was Purdue there?
1980. So that's how long ago for them. But my point being, Tony, that should have appreciated the Aztecs getting there maybe even more last year. That's how hard it is to get there. I mean, because Purdue, North Carolina State, Alabama, those are three pretty good basketball schools. And they haven't tasted this stage in a long, long time. So we'll talk about the NCAA basketball tournament tonight. The spotlight is on the women as well. Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese and Juju Watkins against Paige Beckers. Women's basketball right now at an all-time high.
In the Big Five, I'm going to have a three-point controversy from the women's basketball.
Yes, they got a little news from that this weekend that they probably didn't want, but we'll discuss that a little later. As Gwynn and Chris gets underway, Chris and Scraby here in the studio. Tony Gwynn Jr. at Petco Park, Padres Cardinals later on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
2:21 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby.
By the way, sorry to interrupt. I thought you paused for a second.
Hey, interrupter.
I'm going to interrupt.
That's what you do to me every time.
I'm interrupting
so
to say something nice, though.
Oh.
Tony looked sharp today.
Oh.
Got the white button down. When I first glanced at him on the streaming, I thought he was wearing a sport coat. But just really nice jacket.
Or the dinner jacket, Tony?
No. You were listening.
I was listening. Yes. Yes, I was.
So that's going to be a new feature starting tomorrow on TV. So, you know, I don't want you guys to listen to it too much because obviously we're on 97.3 The Fan. So
yeah. You
won't hear me on there. But one of the cool things they are doing on the broadcast, the television broadcast, is Mike Winters, former umpire. Who I now is kind of like, I don't know if it's liaison is the correct word, but he kind of oversees some of what's going on with the umpires during the game. He's going to join the broadcast, so you'll be able to ask questions.
Oh.
So we were kind of just hitting him with all kinds of, like, questions I had as a kid, you know, that I used to see the umpires. And one of the questions we asked him was about the coat that they wear behind the plate. Often, and it's called, what is it called? Dinner jacket. That's what they call it. Now, the dinner jacket is only allowed behind the dish. You are not allowed to wear it on the bases for whatever reason.
It's a prestigious thing.
I guess so. The dinner jacket was worn yesterday, though, with a home plate umpire. I can't remember who it was, had the dinner jacket on yesterday. So
love it.
Mike Winters is a fountain of information.
Well, you want to know something funny? Last year, I went to a game in like August, and I sat in the press box, and I sat next to a nice guy, and we were talking the entire game. And then at the end, I was like, hey, Matt Scraby. And he was like, oh, I'm Mike Winters. I used to be an umpire. And I'm like, oh, no wonder you know so much about the rules.
Yeah.
He's a nice dude, man. He's a San Diegan.
He told the story...
One of my first, like, spring training big league games, he was umpiring. And I had forgotten about this, but this is how much of a San Diegan he is. As I was running out to my position, he goes, hey, man, that half-court shot you hit in high school, man, was awesome. And I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of crazy. Mike Winters was at my high school game when I was playing hoop. But he'll be joining the broadcast, I think, starting tomorrow.
So will he be the Gene Steratore of the broadcast?
I guess so.
Whenever we got to go for a rules,
yeah, exactly.
Rules explanation.
Now he won't be like if Gene. You can like they like reach out on any type of call that's close. They can reach out and ask.
Gene just gets in his jacket and goes on TV from the house.
I don't think that's going to be Mike. I think it's going to be a designated inning. If something happens in that inning, it'll be easy to ask him about at that point.
I would like to ask you guys about the infield fly rule in the outfield.
Ooh wee.
What do you guys think about that?
That was a bogus call that went to the Padres' way.
Favor, yes.
First of all, I think it was Adam Hamari was the second base umpire. He called that ball, a second before it came down in the glove, and there was nothing routine about that ball. Typically, here's the thing. Ha Sung has, when you watch it from our vantage point, it doesn't look like it's an easy play. But 99% of the time, it's just the way he tracks the ball. It's not like he's having real problems with it. But I think in that actual case, it was a little bit deeper than I think he initially thought. He tried to backpedal as quick as he could. He just never got there. But that infield fly rule saved us, basically, because the runner was already out. The hitter was already out at that point.
Yeah. That happened in a playoff game a few years ago, and I think it was the Braves and the Cardinals.
Oh.
They called an infield fly on a ball that landed in front of the left fielder, basically, a pop-up behind short.
And it was an infield fly.
And they called it an infield fly. The Cardinals thought they had scored a couple runs, or the Braves thought they had scored a couple runs. They called it all back. So, You know, that's a difficult one sometimes.
Is it so rare that it doesn't need to be addressed?
I don't know what you can do about it.
In a big way.
I don't know what you can do about it.
It's a discretion call.
It has to be a discretion call. Right.
And in this case, Adam's discretion was, I think, largely in doubt by everybody who was there.
His discretion was wrong.
Discretion was definitely wrong. It's very rare that you see Bo. Yeah, it's very rare that you see Bo Mel reacting the way he was, but he was pissed, man.
Yeah.
He was another outburst away from getting ejected in that game. He caught himself at the end, though.
Well, I guess Tony Gwynn Jr. not only spending time with Mike Winters, but I heard he's hanging out with a bunch of famous people all weekend. Is this true?
What are we talking about here?
Oh, well, I saw, you know, you all over social media meeting Naomi Girma from The Wave, one of the best soccer players in the world. You also met San Diegan Rashid Shaheed, who's one of the better wide receivers in the league right now. So you were just hanging out with all the famous people.
How do you know they weren't hanging out with him?
No, I was definitely hanging out with them first.
Okay, all right.
Rashid, I got a chance to meet him a few days prior to the game. He was actually at Fitness Quest working out. So I had gone in there to grab some meals, and he was in there. I got a chance to meet a really nice young man. My daughters had seen him a couple days before that because he went to Mount Carmel. And so he showed up at a track meet, and she came back, and she was like, oh, my God, somebody famous was at. She didn't know his name. She just said somebody famous football player was at our track meet, and she was really excited about it. So getting a chance to meet him and his family that came up was cool. Naomi, I think I told this story. When the Wave, their inaugural season, they came, her and the two first-round pick, or the two high picks they had, I think it was Chelsea Turnbow and Naomi came by my house.
Yes, that's right. They wanted to film some sort of informational video.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so I got a chance to meet her there. I've seen her and talked to her a few other times. Obviously, my daughters think, like, the world of her. And so...
Yeah, that's a big deal.
She came up, and it's always crazy to me when people come up to the booth how, like, cool they think what I'm doing, me and Jesse are doing.
It's mind-blowing.
It is cool.
Right, it's really mind-blowing to me to, like, see their faces light up and are like, oh, man, this view. And then they stayed for an inning and listened to me and Jesse do our thing for a half inning. It was cool. It was cool to have him out. She's obviously an inspiring person in the Gwynn household, and I'm sure many others. And she's really good at her job.
Any Emma Stone sightings yet?
No.
Not yet. In the wake of winning another Academy Award?
But I did send Dave, her husband, last time they were here, it was obviously last March, and I had my Tony Gwynn Aztec basketball jersey. And Dave is a big Tony Gwynn, grew up in San Diego, loves the pods, and so I sent him a jersey. So I don't know how that went. I hope it puts me in good graces.
With Emma?
with him and Emma. It's funny. I got to tell this story. My wife's probably going to be mad at me for this.
But yes.
Dave came to Korea. He came with the team to Korea.
Oh, wow.
And my wife somehow cornered him and was like, basically, your wife and I need to be best friends.
Uh-huh. And, okay.
Please, this is, yes.
There was a some moment that happened at an award show where I think she felt connected to Emma Stone, where I think she came on stage and was just kind of going in about how cool it was to be on stage. And I think it was Jonah Hill that she kind of referenced and was like doing, like, saying that they should be like dancing or something. And my wife recited this whole thing to Dave, her husband. And I'm glad I wasn't there, because as she was telling the story, I was like crawling into a hole.
Secondhand embarrassment.
But he was a good sport about it. He was all good. He remembered the moment, and It made my wife feel
pretty good. He has a lot of people come up to him and say that they think that they and his wife ought to be best friends.
Yeah, I would do it too. So
Emma Stone's
next time
pretty,
I see him,
pretty,
hey,
pretty big time.
Your wife
right
and
now.
I would be great friends.
Yeah,
so just put in a good word.
Have
for
her
me.
Give me a call.
Yes.
Nonetheless, that's as close as Emma Stone's gotten to the booth here. So
all right.
There's that.
She'll be coming by soon.
Let's get to break. When we come back, Mark Ziegler joins us. We get a chance to put a bow on the San Diego State season here in 2023-24. More Gwen and Chris on the way.
All right, pay attention. Not that you don't normally pay attention, but this is really a good time to pay attention because at some point during the show today, that'd be between now and 5:30, we are going to give you the chance out there to win a pair of Padre tickets. That's right, tomorrow night's Padres-Cardinals game. The first 40,000 fans in attendance tomorrow night are going to receive a City Connect poncho, which is presented by us, 97.3 The Fan. For
it's
more information,
nice
visit padres.com/giveaways. These ponchos are making the rounds. I know. I've seen them all over.
Me too.
And you can get yours tomorrow night. And if you don't have tickets to the game, stay tuned because we're going to give you a chance to win a pair. Padres-Cardinals game tomorrow night. That opportunity for you will be coming up shortly.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Graham Pauly in the starting lineup tonight. Speaking of the Padres, he gets his first big league start, if I'm not mistaken.
Second,
he already started a game.
Wasn't it in
yesterday?
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
I didn't. He started yesterday after this home run on Saturday.
Yes.
So Graham Pauly will be in the lineup again today then. Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, Machado, Kim, Profar, Campusano, Pauly, Merrill. To face Kyle Gibson, Matt Waldron. Doesn't like it, but we still call him a knuckleballer. He'll be on the mound for the Padres tonight, making his first start.
We actually got a chat about Matt Waldron tonight. The person said, Marco said, I'm excited to see dudes spin out of their cleats trying to hit Matt's knuckleball. So there you go, Marco.
We will see.
We will.
Cardinals come in with a record of 1-3, having tangled with the Dodgers over the weekend. What is
right.
that? Is that
that's
music just, at Petco
yes,
Park?
Yeah, that's
or
at
was
Petco
that
Park.
You?
They're getting the music popping here.
They're getting the music popping. I love it. couple of quick things. Pirates, they want to be 5-0. Nats, 3-1, top of the sixth inning. In D.C. this afternoon, Pirates
when we did the Central. Like this is a team that could, you know, I was reluctant to put them last. I think I ended up putting them last, but
I think you did.
It's a team that got off to a good start last year before they faded. So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise that they're playing some good baseball again.
They're off and rolling to begin the season. So are the Braves, who are ahead of the White Sox 9-0. And the new lefty for the Chicago Cubs, Imanaga, debuted against the Rockies with six shutout innings, allowed just a couple of hits, and the Cubs beat Colorado.
Boy, your favorite team, man. Did you see how they gave up their run? They lost 5-0 today.
Yeah, they did. They gave up 3 unearned runs, right?
It was a doozy of a play. It was a base hit, second and third.
Uh-huh.
Base hit to left field, line drive, or ground ball base hit.
Right.
I think it was Jones in left.
Yeah.
Overran it.
Oh, boy.
Rolled all the way to the wall. And then in the process of getting that ball back in, there was another boot.
He threw it up into the stands or something, yeah.
Which allowed somebody to come in all the way for like a little league homer. I think it was Morrell who hit the ball.
Little league home run. Yeah.
It was kind of back to the same old with the Rockies.
What do you expect? What do you expect? All right, let's get to the phones right now. Our friend Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union-Tribune is joining us. We always love having him on the show. Mark, good to talk to you this week. How are you? How long did it take to get over that loss for the Aztecs? I wouldn't imagine too long because it's just one of those nights where you never really, unfortunately, had a chance against the Huskies.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Sometimes those blowouts are a lot easier to digest than that close game where you're just kicking yourself and going over every single play in your mind. Oh, if I'd done this, I made this free throw in the first 10 minutes of the game, or I'd gotten a steal, or I hadn't turned it over, you know. And so there was really none of that. It didn't really matter what they did. They weren't winning that game. And then I think it probably, I don't say it helped, but to see Illinois go through the exact same pain in the exact same way, I think they were able to flush it pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that their pain might have been worse with the 30-0 run that was opened up on them. Obviously, this is another, I think, from most of us who've been around this program, Zig, this is another successful season. It didn't end, I don't think, the way anybody really wanted it to, but certainly, you know, back-to-back appearances at the Sweet 16, I think, is another notch in the belt of this program. Although it's getting hit over the head a little bit. Chris Acker takes the job at Long Beach State. Just talk a little bit about that loss for this program, and where does this program go now from here? Because it feels like we've gotten to that kind of Gonzaga moment where, you know, you get to a final, you get back to a Sweet 16. This program is continuing to ascend, it seems like.
Yeah, it really is. I think this year changes a lot. You know, last year, you know, some people probably looked at that and said, okay, you know, they got good matchups, they had an old team, you know, they had lots of depth. And they won a bunch of close games, and, you know, they got to the final and they were lucky. And I think what this year proved is, no, they weren't lucky. They got the exact same seed they did the year before. They got to the Sweet 16. They played a number one overall seed, and, you know, they ran into a team that, you know, is probably one of the best basketball teams of our generation, college basketball teams. I mean, these guys are a machine right now. And so I think that kind of validated last season in a way, if that makes any sense. And so, this is a program that has climbed another level because of this season, and it's kind of like what Gonzaga did. They went to all those Sweet 16s and they finally broke through. Same state's kind of done in reverse a little bit. They broke through and now they stacked a Sweet 16 on top of it. So it's a different level, and because of that, you know, people are going to be attracted to it and attracted to the pieces, and so Chris Acker is one of them. You know, maybe some players decide to transfer. That could be another. But I think what this program's proven, and what, you know, Brian Dutcher says a lot, is, look, we've adjusted through the various eras of college basketball, and we'll adjust again, and we'll just keep reloading as best we can.
Mark Ziegler covers the Aztecs for the San Diego Union-Tribune, our guest here. The Aztecs finish up with another Sweet 16 season, the fourth in school history. And, yeah, like Tony said, for that, I'm very thankful. I mean, for them to be able to bounce back after last year and do something like this again. Mark, you've been writing about all this stuff. Update those who are interested in terms of who you don't know, but who might leave, who might not leave among the seniors. I know that Jaden Ledee's going to the NBA draft. I think Trammell has exhausted his eligibility. But Lamont Butler has not. Micah Parrish, I believe, has not. Hey, what do you think the chances any of these guys return? Or when will we all find all this out? I guess there's a whole lot that has to still happen, huh?
So, yeah, it's those two, and Reese Waters is the other big rotation piece that has another year of eligibility. So sort of the unfortunate timing with all this is the transfer portal has been open for 2 weeks. And so you think guys would want to make some quick decisions about what they're going to do next. But San Diego State's on spring break. And so they're college kids. So a lot of them are gone for this week. And so I think some of the decisions will start coming in next week as the coaches can meet with players, and kind of chart a path forward. And so in terms of each of those guys, I mean, I think Reese Waters is the closest to you know, being a sure thing to come back. I wouldn't say he's 100% sure, but I think I expect to see him back with the Aztecs next year. Now, the other two guys, between Micah and Lamont, I would say Micah has the least chance of getting back or coming back. I think he's kind of run his course in the program, and I think he'll move on, either just turn pro, or maybe trying to find a spot somewhere else for 1 year. Lamont's, and I just spoke with his mom. I'm writing a story about that today. It's a really interesting, complicated, unique situation that he finds himself in that, you know, he's just not another player to San Diego. If he goes somewhere else, he's just another player. But if he stays in San Diego, you know, he's a special guy. He's a legend. He's an icon. He's the guy who made the shot. And he's remembered that way. He has a lot of real NIL in San Diego with a lot of businesses, the way NIL was meant to be, instead of just handing a guy a wad of cash. And so he's got to decide if he wants to stay and continue that, those marketing ventures, or does he want to, you know, set out and go somewhere else for a year in another college, or does he want to try to just go pro? And so it's all these things that are just making it a much more complicated and involved decision. Sounds like he's going to take a couple weeks to compress, which is probably a really smart thing to do instead of making a rash decision, and then sit down with his parents, his family, the coaches, and kind of come to some kind of conclusion about what's next for him. But I could see any of all of those being in play, but of the two of those guys, Parrish and Butler, I would think Butler is the best chance of coming back, but I think it's 50-50 at best at this point, just because nobody knows.
It's so crazy to me what students like this have to weigh now. It used to be, do I want to go to draft or not? Now you got NIL involved, the transfer portal, is just so much more to it than there used to be. Mark Ziegler joins us, Union Tribune, here on Gwen and Chris. And Mark, there was a lot of discussion. I know we discussed it on the show a lot about how good the conference was all season long. One of the toughest conferences in the nation. Then we get to the tournament, and just San Diego State and I think Utah State are the only teams that end up getting a victory. Does that then hurt the conference moving forward, or is it just a year-to-year thing in terms of how the committee looks at this conference when they are selecting teams for the tournament?
So it should be a year-to-year thing. It's a good question. It's a fascinating issue to me. It's supposed to be in the surface a year-to-year thing. You're not supposed to have any sort of institutional memory about how certain conferences did. But the reality is these are human beings on a selection committee. And I think the problem this year wasn't so much they took six Mountain West teams or how they did. It's that they didn't take Big East teams. They didn't take more ACC teams. And those are power conferences with really, really powerful commissioners and athletic directors and presidents. And you know they're breathing down the necks of the selection committees and saying, wait a minute here. You took a conference where the league champion lost by 39 and your next best team lost by 30, although I think everyone's going to get a pass for losing to UConn. But the other teams, you know, they didn't step up, and it wasn't so much to me that they lost. It was how they lost. It was New Mexico making that run through the conference tournament and then getting their doors blown off and looking like fools out there. It was Nevada blowing a 17-point lead in 7 minutes. It was Utah State getting blown out by 39. It was, Boise State bitching that they should have been a 7 seed, which would have played a 10 seed in the first round and then played the 10 seed in the playing game and goes flat and has no offense and can't win it. You know, so in Colorado State scored 40-something points in their first round after they won their play-in game. And so on and on and on. I think it's just going to hurt them down the road. It's too bad. But I didn't think the Mountain West was going to get six in next year anyway, just the way NIL works and the transfer portal. And I think, you know, it was a very old league this year. All the best players were fifth-year seniors. The teams were fifth-year seniors. And a lot of those guys are gone, and it's going to be hard to reload.
Mark Ziegler's with us. Of course, we want to know what the Aztecs are going to look like next year. And we don't know, again, about Butler and, Parrish and Reese Waters. One guy it seems we do know about is Magoon Gwath. And I've seen some video of him. You wrote a little bit about this guy, 7-footer. Did not get healthy enough to be eligible to play this season. But is that the guy they're able to build around to start, at least looking ahead to next season, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be an integral piece of what they do next season. I don't want people to get like their hopes completely elevated, because when you kind of see him play and you see all the skill set he has, it's really easy to get really excited. But he's just going to be a true freshman who has played zero basketball, you know, in games for a year and really for almost 2 years.
All right, pay attention. not that you don't normally pay attention, but this is really a good time to pay attention because at some point during the show today, that'd be between now and 5:30, we are going to give you the chance out there to win a pair of Padre tickets. That's right, tomorrow night's Padres-Cardinals game. The first 40,000 fans in attendance tomorrow night are going to receive a City Connect poncho, which is presented by us, 97.3 The Fan. For more information, visit padres.com/giveaways. These ponchos are making the rounds. I know. I've seen them all over.
Me too.
And you can get yours tomorrow night. And if you don't have tickets to the game, stay tuned because we're going to give you a chance to win a pair. Padres-Cardinals game tomorrow night. That opportunity for you will be coming up shortly.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Graham Pauly in the starting lineup tonight. Speaking of the Padres, he gets his first big league start, if I'm not mistaken.
Second,
he already started a game.
Wasn't it in...
yesterday?
Oh, sorry. Oh. I didn't... He started yesterday after this home run on Saturday. Yes. So Graham Pauly will be in the lineup again today then. Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, Machado, Kim, Profar, Campusano, Pauly, Merrill. To face Kyle Gibson, Matt Waldron. Doesn't like it, but we still call him a knuckleballer. He'll be on the mound for the Padres tonight, making his first start.
We actually got a chat about Matt Waldron tonight. Marco said, I'm excited to see dudes spin out of their cleats trying to hit Matt's knuckleball. So there you go, Marco.
We will see.
We will.
Cardinals come in with a record of 1-3. Having tangled with the Dodgers over the weekend. What is all that? Right. Is that
that's
music just, at Petco
yes,
Park?
Yeah, that's at Petco
that
Park. They're getting the music popping here.
The music popping. I love it. A couple of quick things. Pirates, they want to be 5-0. Nats, 3-1, top of the sixth inning in D.C. this afternoon. Pirates
when we did the Central, like, this is a team that could, you know, I was reluctant to put them last. I think I ended up putting them last, but
I think you did.
It's a team that got off to a good start last year before they faded. So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise that they're playing some good baseball again.
They're off and rolling to begin the season. So are the Braves, who are ahead of the White Sox 9-0. And the new lefty for the Chicago Cubs, Imanaga, debuted against the Rockies with six shutout innings, allowed just a couple of hits, and the Cubs beat Colorado.
Boy, your favorite team, man. Did you see how they gave up their run? They lost 5-0 today.
Yeah, they did. They gave up 3 unearned runs, right?
It was a doozy of a play. It was a base hit, second and third. Base hit to left field, line drive, or ground ball base hit.
Right.
I think it was Jones in left.
Yeah.
Overran it.
Oh, boy.
Rolled all the way to the wall, and then in the process of getting that ball back in, there was another boot.
He threw it up into the stands or something, yeah.
Which allowed somebody to come in all the way for like a little league homer. I think it was Morrell who hit the ball.
Little league home run, yeah.
It was kind of back to the same old with the Rockies.
What do you expect? What do you expect? All right, let's get to the phones right now. Our friend Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union-Tribune is joining us. We always love having him on the show. Mark, good to talk to you this week. How are you? How long did it take to get over that loss for the Aztecs? I wouldn't imagine too long because it's just one of those nights where you never really, unfortunately, had a chance against the Huskies.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Sometimes those blowouts are a lot easier to digest than that close game where you're just kicking yourself and going over every single play in your mind. Oh, if I'd done this, I'd made this free throw in the first 10 minutes of the game, or I'd gotten a steal, or I hadn't turned it over, you know. And so there was really none of that. It didn't really matter what they did. They weren't winning that game. And then I think it probably, I don't say it helped, but to see Illinois go through the exact same pain in the exact same way, I think they were able to flush it pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that their pain might have been worse with the 30-0 run that was opened up on them. Obviously, this is another, I think, from most of us who've been around this program, Zig, this is another successful season. It didn't end, I don't think, the way anybody really wanted it to, but certainly you know, back-to-back appearances of at the Sweet 16, I think, is another notch in the belt of this program. Although it's getting hit over the head a little bit. Chris Acker takes the job at Long Beach State. Just talk a little bit about that loss for this program, and where does this program go now from here? Because it feels like we've gotten to that kind of Gonzaga moment where, you know, you get to a final, you get back to a Sweet 16. This program is continuing to ascend, it seems like.
Yeah, it really is. I think this year changes a lot. You know, last year, you know, some people probably looked at that and said, okay, you know, they got good matchups, they had an old team, you know, they had lots of depth, and they won a bunch of close games, and, you know, they got to the final and they were lucky. And I think what this year proved is, no, they weren't lucky. They got the exact same seed they did the year before. They got to the Sweet 16. They played a number one overall seed, and, you know, they ran into a team that, you know, is probably one of the best basketball teams of our generation, college basketball teams. I mean, these guys are a machine right now. And so I think that kind of validated last season in a way, if that makes any sense. And so, this is a program that has climbed another level because of this season. And it's kind of like what Gonzaga did. They went to all those Sweet 16s and they finally broke through. San Jose State's kind of done in reverse a little bit. They broke through and now they stacked a Sweet 16 on top of it. So it's a different level. And because of that, you know, people are going to be attracted to it, and attracted to the pieces. And so Chris Acker is one of them. You know, maybe some players decide to transfer. That could be another. But I think what this program's proven, and what, you know, Brian Dutcher says a lot, is, look, we've adjusted through the various eras of college basketball, and we'll adjust again, and we'll just keep reloading as best we can.
Mark Ziegler covers the Aztecs for the San Diego Union-Tribune, our guest here. The Aztecs finish up with another Sweet 16 season, the fourth in school history. And, yeah, like Tony said, for that, I'm very thankful. I mean, for them to be able to bounce back after last year and do something like this again. Mark, you've been writing about all this stuff. Update those who are interested in terms of who you don't know, but who might leave, who might not leave among the seniors. I know that Jaden Ledee's going to the NBA draft. I think Trammell has exhausted his eligibility. But Lamont Butler has not. Micah Parrish, I believe, has not. Hey, what do you think the chances any of these guys return? Or when will we all find all this out? I guess there's a whole lot that has to still happen, huh?
So, yeah, it's those two, and Reese Waters is the other big rotation piece that has another year of eligibility. So sort of the unfortunate timing with all this is the transfer portal has been open for 2 weeks. And so you think guys would want to make some quick decisions about what they're going to do next. But San Diego State's on spring break. And so they're college kids. So a lot of them are gone for this week. And so I think some of the decisions will start coming in next week as the coaches can meet with players, and kind of chart a path forward. And so in terms of each of those guys, I mean, I think Reese Waters is the closest to being a sure thing to come back. I wouldn't say he's 100% sure, but I think I expect to see him back with the Aztecs next year. Now, the other two guys, between Micah and Lamont, I would say Micah has the least chance of getting back or coming back. I think he's kind of run his course in the program, and I think he'll move on, either just turn pro, or maybe trying to find a spot somewhere else for 1 year. Lamont's, and I just spoke with his mom. I'm writing a story about that today. It's a really interesting, complicated, unique situation that he finds himself in that, you know, he's just not another player to San Diego. If he goes somewhere else, he's just another player. But if he stays in San Diego, you know, he's a special guy. He's a legend. He's an icon. He's the guy who made the shot. And he's remembered that way. He has a lot of real NIL in San Diego with a lot of businesses, the way NIL was meant to be, instead of just handing the guy a wad of cash. And so he's got to decide if he wants to stay and continue that, those marketing ventures, or does he want to, you know, set out and go somewhere else for a year in another college, or does he want to try to just go pro? And so it's all these things that are just making it a much more complicated and involved decision. Sounds like he's going to take a couple weeks to impress, which is probably a really smart thing to do. instead of making a rash decision, and then sit down with his parents, his family, the coaches, and kind of come to some kind of conclusion about what's next for him. But I could see any of all of those being in play. But of the two of those guys, Parrish and Butler, I would think Butler has the best chance of coming back. But I think it's 50-50 at best at this point, just because nobody knows.
So crazy to me what students like this have to weigh now. It used to be, do I want to go to draft or not? Now you got NIL involved, the transfer portal. It's just so much more to it than there used to be. Mark Ziegler joins us, Union Tribune, here on Gwen and Chris. And Mark, there was a lot of discussion. I know we discussed it on the show a lot about how good the conference was all season long. One of the toughest conferences in the nation. Then we get to the tournament, and just San Diego State and I think Utah State are the only teams that end up getting a victory. Does that then hurt the conference moving forward, or is it just a year-to-year thing in terms of how the committee looks at this conference when they are selecting teams for the tournament?
So it should be a year-to-year thing. It's a good question. It's a fascinating issue to me. It's supposed to be in the surface a year-to-year thing. You're not supposed to have any sort of institutional memory about how certain conferences did. But the reality is these are human beings on a selection committee. And I think the problem this year wasn't so much they took six Mountain West teams or how they did. It's that they didn't take Big East teams. They didn't take more ACC teams. And those are power conferences with really, really powerful commissioners and athletic directors and presidents. And you know they're breathing down the necks of the selection committees and saying, wait a minute here. You took a conference where you're the league champion lost by 39 and your next best team lost by 30, although I think everyone's going to get a pass for losing to UConn. But the other teams, they didn't step up. And it wasn't so much to me that they lost. It was how they lost. It was New Mexico making that run through the conference tournament and then getting blown, their doors blown off and looking like fools out there. It was Nevada blowing a 17-point lead in 7 minutes. It was Utah State getting blown out by 39. It was, Boise State bitching that they should have been a 7 seed, which would have played a 10 seed in the first round and then plays a 10 seed in the play-in game and goes flat and has no offense and can't win it. Colorado State scored 40-something points in their first round after they won their play-in game. And so on and on. I think it's just going to hurt them down the road. It's too bad. But I didn't think the Mountain West was going to get six in next year anyway, just the way NIL works and the transfer portal. And I think it was a very old league this year. All the best players were fifth-year seniors. The teams were fifth-year seniors. And a lot of those guys are gone. It's going to be hard to reload.
Mark Ziegler is with us. Of course, we want to know what the Aztecs are going to look like next year. And we don't know, again, about Butler and, Parrish and Reese Waters. One guy it seems we do know about is Magoon Gwath. And I've seen some video of him. You wrote a little bit about this guy, 7-footer. Did not get healthy enough to be eligible to play this season. But is that the guy they're able to build around to start, at least looking ahead to next season, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be an integral piece of what they do next season. I don't want people to get like their hopes completely elevated because when you kind of see him play and you see all the skill set he has, it's really easy to get really excited. But he's just going to be a true freshman who has played zero basketball, in games for a year and really for almost 2 years because he didn't play that much his senior year of high school either. And so he's going to be rusty and it's going to take him a while to adjust and he's still got to put on weight. He's going to get pushed around, but it's something that they've never really had before. I mean, Malik Pope was kind of like him, but he's bigger, a better shot blocker, maybe even a better shooter and ball handler on the surface. It's something that teams don't have, particularly in the Mountain West. And he can just be an absolute weapon out there, playing the four at 7 feet and blocking shots and running the floor and shooting threes and, taking guys off the dribble and shooting fallaways. Just has incredible hands and a feel for the game. So it's exciting, Keith. And I think, one of the great things about him in this NIL era is, because he redshirted, because he was just kind of under the radar, no one really knows about him. except for the people who are in practice and saw him. And so all of a sudden, it's not like a guy you have to go out and spend $500,000 to get. He's there already. And so I think that really helps them to go get, add other pieces around him.
Well, Mark, I think, you know, I think Coach Dutch summed it up the best, too. I mean, he said, look, the ending wasn't what they wanted, but the journey is what everybody's going to remember. And what this team has done for the last 2 years is going to be hard for anybody to forget. Thanks for, you know, chipping in and keeping us up to date with the Aztecs. Hopefully we'll catch up with you soon. You're heading to you got an Olympic assignment coming up. You're still a couple months away from that, but I imagine that's on your plate already.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the Final Four. It's just down the Interstate 8, so I'll be there. And then following week, there's the Olympic Media Summit, which is a really kind of an interesting event where they bring all the athletes, 100-plus athletes, to one place and all the media to one place, and you just basically do interviews for 3 straight days. It's really tiring, but it's a great background, so you kind of know everybody's stories. You get a feel for all the events. And then, yeah, I'll be going to Paris this summer, mostly covering our local. We'll have tons of local athletes. I'll be at the skateboard park quite a bit because we are Skateboard Central in San Diego.
Such a bummer, Mark. I mean, you go from Laramie to Paris. I think you're stepping up. You're making
Hey, we didn't have to go to Laramie this year.
I did not go to Laramie this year. That's right. Well, I'm
you
sure.
You did, but I did not.
You did not, yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll you missed it. Mark, thanks for everything as always. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, talk to you guys. See you.
Always
Bye.
Good. Mark Ziegler there, updating us on the Aztecs. And Tony, I don't know if you've seen Magoon Gwath. The 7-footer.
Haven't.
You haven't seen him yet?
Mm-mm.
I've seen some video of him. He's 7 foot. He does definitely needs to put a little weight, but he can handle the basketball. He's certainly not Wembanyama, but that's the kind of thing I saw, you know, as a 7 foot guy that can dribble and then reach up and just dunk the basketball at any time.
I ain't
so
mad at that.
That's a good start for Brian Dutcher next year.
Listen, right now, including that young man that you're talking about, you got, in terms of the kind of core they have coming back, if indeed Lamont comes back, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
If indeed Reese Waters comes back, that's a bonus. You got Miles Byrd, who I thought did an excellent job. Elijah Sanders, who's did Miles Hyde. You got some pieces to go along with the 7-footer you're talking about that could, you know, reason to be excited.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't fair to Brian Dutcher, but our expectations are that they're going to be good again because he's kind of made us think that.
That's what he's built.
I don't think Brian would have it any other way.
Exactly.
I love Kenny G in the background, though.
I know.
Kenny G is great.
You're jamming back over here.
Well, I know. You're all getting a little preview of tonight's national anthem as we get ready to go into hour number two in a daily gambit.
Listen to those lungs.
All right, Scraby.
I'm always like very
so
jealous when people
this.
Can play instruments.
Play an instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too. I'm with you on that.
All right, good. Chris?
Scraby, go practice the kazoo, and then we'll come back with hour number two.
Oh, hey.
Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.